Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Thanks for joining us. I'm your host for today's show.
And I'm Bob Kessler, executive producer. We have what's going on in the White House dominating the news yet again. Something President Trump did a few weeks ago has big environmental ramifications. We're talking about national monuments and how those have been changed. We'll see what that could mean for other natural areas in the future. Also, replacing pipes with plants. This is an innovative way to use Mother Nature to do the job of big drainage systems.
All coming up on this week's edition of Green Sense. Once President Trump signed two presidential proclamations last year, it reduced the size of both the Bear's Ear and the Grand Staircase National Monuments in Utah. Millions of acres of public land in Utah are now no longer protected. How much of what is now unprotected land will be used by industry? Will it be used for mining or oil and gas production? What does this mean for other protected lands in the future? To answer these questions and more, we're joined now by Adam Markham, Deputy Director of the Climate and Energy Program for the Union of Concerned Scientists. Welcome, Adam.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
To put this in context, national parks are designated by Congress, national monuments by the President. Why did President Obama choose to protect these two monuments in Utah?
Well, these are amazing pieces of land. The human history in Grand Escalante goes back 13,000 years. Both of these huge areas have incredible importance for tribes in the region. So, for example, Bear's Ears is important for the Navajo, the Ute, Mountain Ute, Hopi, and Zuni. For them, it's all a cultural landscape, and these pieces of land contain hundreds of thousands of cultural and archaeological sites. Apart from that, they're incredible ecologically and recreationally. They're unbelievable places to walk and hike and climb, and they're just beautiful pieces of land as well.
So what do you see this land being used for now that it's unprotected?
I think the biggest fear is, as is happening with a lot of our public lands, is opening up for mining, minerals extraction, perhaps even uranium, and drilling for gas and oil. I mean, this is happening around our public lands, that the Trump administration is basically saying it's open season for mining and drilling. There's been sort of claims that, well, the designation as national monuments prevents things like grazing or commercial logging. The rules are different in every national monument, but for example, at Bear's Ears, it's already allowed to do grazing and hunting and fishing, so that wouldn't change for people. So it's really being used as an excuse to open up for mining and drilling, I think.
And what was President Trump's motive for doing this?
Well, who knows what his motives were, but it looks like it is to increase natural resource extraction from public lands. They want to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. They want to start drilling for oil again in protected offshore areas. So I think that it's very much, it's sort of a philosophy which says, well, public lands are not for everybody, they're for the natural resource industry, and that's the concern.
Several groups have filed suit, perhaps even the Union of Concerned Scientists. Is this battle over yet, or it will be left to the courts to decide?
Well, we're not amongst the groups that have filed suit, but the five tribes involved have, and the Center for Biodiversity and Natural Resources Defense Council and a lot of other groups are jointly on these suits. This battle is absolutely not over. There's never been a reversal of a presidential national monument designation before, and our view is that the president only has the right to create national monuments, but not to reverse or shrink them. And so this is likely to go all the way to the Supreme Court.
Do you think there's a strong case here to keep this land protected?
I think there's a very strong case, and I think it would be tragic if the opposite happens, because if these national monuments can be shrunk, then that puts the future of preservation of public lands in the U.S. in question, I think, for all time. I mean, these are supposed to be protected areas that cannot be unprotected. And President Trump and Secretary Zinke are trying to reverse that. This is the largest piece of public land that has ever had federal protections removed from it, if this goes through.
My guest is Adam Markham, Deputy Director of the Climate and Energy Program for the Union of Concerned Scientists, joining us on Green Sense to talk about President Trump's reversal of President Obama's creation of national monuments. Adam, here on Green Sense, we promote striking a balance between conservation and business. Many in Utah are in favor of President Trump's decision for economic reasons, and there's a lot of poverty in those parts of the state. Could there be a way to keep the national monuments and have thriving businesses in the area?
Well, there's actually a lot of economic evidence that shows that the creation of national monuments increases economic benefits to local communities. One group, Headwaters Economics, based out of Montana, recently studied 17 Western national monuments, and in all those cases, economic activity increased in the local communities after the designation of national monuments. One of the groups that is in favor of the national monuments is the U.S. Outdoor Industry Association, which has hundreds of members in the outdoor recreation business world, and they are very actively opposing President Trump's actions here. So I think it's really a small minority of businesses in the region that are opposed to these monuments.
What does this mean for other national monuments going forward? Was this a one-off case, or do you see other monuments being in jeopardy?
These monuments are the first that we've heard of. Secretary Zinke has reviewed a number of monuments at President Trump's request, and he has recommended that several of them be either shrunk or have their management strategies changed. And so, for example, he's also wanting to cut Nevada's Gold Butte and Oregon's Cascade Siquiyou, which is incredible mountain and forest habitat. And then in both the Atlantic and the Pacific, they're suggesting management changes which would allow commercial fishing in protected areas, the Pacific remote islands off of Hawaii and the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts National Monument up in the George's Bank of New England. And there's also suggestions to allow more commercial use of the Organ Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument, for example, in New Mexico. So there's several other monuments under threat, and we don't know yet what the proposals are going to be from President Trump, but we fear the worst.
What about the court of public opinion? With so much noise in the news these days, are these issues even on the public's radar scope?
I think they are on the public screen where people are interested in biodiversity, public lands, outdoor recreation. So, and then I think the people who are opposed to public lands in the West, it's also very much on their radar screen. So perhaps not in the mainstream yet, because not everybody knows the details of what's happening. But what we do know is that the National Park Service is, after the post office, it's the U.S.'s most popular federal agency. And this is going to affect all our national parks as well as other public lands. And so I think that people will start hearing about this once they are getting out and about the country as the weather gets better and they start going on their vacation. So I think this is going to become a bigger issue as it filters through the courts.
We pride ourselves here at Green Sense on being able to give advice to people who want to take action. So what should people who feel strongly about this issue do to be proactive?
Well, I think first and foremost, they should make their concerns known to the White House and to Secretary Zinke and to their members of Congress. Congress is supposed to be the only entity which can change the status of national monuments. And so members of Congress should be paying attention to this. There were 2.5 million public comments, most of them in favor of maintaining the monuments at their current status. And so we know there are people out there who are deeply, deeply concerned about this. Also, if they're involved in something like the Outdoor Industry Association, or they know, you know, they buy materials for, you know, Gore-Tex or Adidas or any of the Patagonia, many of the companies that are involved with the Outdoor Industry Association, they should let those companies know as well. So the private sector and congressional representatives in the White House, I mean, this needs to become a bigger public issue.
Adam, thank you for joining us on Green Sense, and we appreciate your comments and input on this issue.
Thank you very much.
That's Adam Markham, Deputy Director of the Climate and Energy Program for the Union of Concerned Scientists, joining us on Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo, and remember to subscribe to our podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com. We're on all the major podcast platforms.
Bob Kessler, executive producer of Green Sense Radio. Every week we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports Green Sense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together Green Sense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. It takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep Green Sense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at Green Sense Radio, thank you. Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Our next guest is a Renaissance man. He's an artist, poet, conservationist, and an elected official. He's pioneered solutions in green infrastructure, and he's on a mission as the Ingham County Drain Commissioner in the state of Michigan to replace pipes with plants, saving money, and improving the quality of life in the community. Patrick Lindemann, welcome to Green Sense.
Well, welcome to you having me here. I like it. Thank you.
Well, it's always,
always a pleasure to talk to you.
And you too, Patrick. You're a global leader in what you're doing, and we want to help get your story out. So in simple terms, explain green infrastructure and how you replace pipes that convey stormwater with plants.
Well, green infrastructure is, in fact, the replacing of concrete infrastructure or traditional infrastructure with more native kinds of the things that nature would normally do. Daylighting pipes, for example, using dirt as soil medium, dirt and sand and gravel as soil mediums to promote plant growth, which transevaporate the water and clean it and transform the pollution into clean water, the polluted water into clean water.
Why is this good for the environment?
Well, the Montgomery drain, which is the one that's on my drawing board right now, and I'm going to be starting in October. It is 80% impervious, and it is about a 400-acre watershed. It goes right directly, dumps directly into the Red Cedar River. Annually, that watershed produces roughly 50,000 to 75,000 pounds of pollution in the water column that goes to the river. When I'm done building this, I will not only reduce the water going to the river in terms of volume, but I will reduce almost all, probably about 96 to 98% of all the pollution will no longer go there.
And how does this improve the quality of life in the community?
Well, green infrastructure. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody having a picnic around a concrete pipe, but with
that the says it all.
And ponds.
You painted a great picture.
Yeah. So the wetlands and infrastructure that I build is all user-friendly. People can interact with it. In fact, the Montgomery Drain, we formed a subcommittee called Art in the Wild. And we are going to use art, museum-quality art, to explain environmental problems and solutions to the public. I find myself a lot of times preaching to the choir. You know, people who are environmentalists like to hear what I say, and and they're already sold on the idea. But I need to reach the vast number of people who haven't understood yet that pollution is bad for them. So we're going to use art to do that and bring them to these constructed low-impact design facilities that I'm building. The mission of that is to enhance environmental restoration through the integration of art and human imagination. And the goal is to fund, select, place, maintain in perpetuity art in areas of environmental renewal. So this is pretty cool, actually. We're going to put about $10 million worth of art in this one drain.
I think your answer said it all. You never see picnics around a concrete pipe. But adding art to the equation, that's fantastic. That really does stimulate the soul.
Yeah, we're going to have, there'll be live music every Saturday along the paths. I'm putting in this one drain, I'm putting in over 2.1 miles of hiking, biking paths in and around the wetlands. Michigan Avenue has a boulevard, for example, which is just a mounded green space with a few trees. It's going to be turned into a running, babbling brook running both east and west from the center. And we have $1.5 million piece of bronze art that's going to go on top of the fountain that shoots the water out.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is Patrick Lindemann, Ingham County Drain Commissioner, and we're talking about his mission to replace pipes with plants to convey and make the community more livable. So we talked about how this can improve the quality of life in the community, but properties next to green space often see an increase in value. Have you been able to quantify how your improvements have caused property values to rise?
Well, we can go even further than that. When you create a green space around a property, the property values tend to go up. Yes, and we have proof of that. We have there's been studies done by real estate agencies and a variety of universities across the country. But when you put blue in there with the green, in other words, put water next to it, it almost triples the value that people see in that piece of open space. And when we're extracting pollution, creating an environment where people can interact with the water, then rainwater no longer becomes a waste product. It becomes a resource that's valued. And it's that value that increases everyone's property around it. And there's going to be a development along this project here of over somewhere around $500 million is going to be spent by the private sector to put in a Marriott hotel, student housing. There's 250 condos and townhouses with 8 or 9 retail, brand new restaurants, entertainment centers, retail space, and a hospital surgical center, all in this drain because I'm rebuilding this drain this way. So if you say that you can't have economic development and clean the water at the same time, that's just flat out wrong. And the beauty of this kind of infrastructure is that it is cheaper, by sometimes 90% cheaper than traditional engineered designs. I can build a stream for 1/10 the cost of putting a pipe in the ground.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the economics and how you save money. Tell us why this is 90% cheaper than using pipes.
Well, pipes are expensive, and you have to go underground. It takes longer to put them in, and it takes a lot more effort to go through the conflicts underground with the gas pipes and the drinking water lines and sanitary sewer lines and so on and so forth. But when you put it above ground, I just have to dig a ditch and put rocks around it and plant it with beautiful plants, indigenous plants, and make it function as a water filter. And it's visible year round. The toll gate drain, which I took you on a tour of, for example, that's just one example of many of them that I've done. That particular project, we saved over $18 million from a traditional design to handle that stormwater in that watershed. And the biggest argument that people make is that now you have to maintain it. That's true. You do. The cost of maintaining that wetland complex that handles all that water, which doesn't put any water to the river, and everything is clean. It's almost drinkable when it goes through the system, and it's beautiful. There are people there all the time. But the beauty of it is that I can maintain that for over 600 years and not spend what I saved.
That's fantastic. And as you said, it improves the quality of life, and it helps either keep taxes fixed or lower your taxes. So you're recognized as an international expert, Patrick. Tell us about the project that you've got on the table right now and how it's applicable, not just to Michigan, but worldwide.
Well, if you took a city like Detroit or Philadelphia, for example, is going to spend a couple $1 billion on redoing their stormwater infrastructure in their downtown area. The way that I've designed this system, this is a really dense urban area with a major highway going through it. It's 80% impervious. It's full of shopping centers, parking lots, and residents. And it's jam-packed with concrete, basically. You can go into any city and rebuild it and make it attractive to be there again. This is going to redefine Michigan Avenue in Lansing, Michigan. It's going to make a destination out of it. I can envision through this Art in the Wild project, which is meant to use art to teach people about the environment, is going to be a destination for a long time. Our goal is to put $10 million worth of museum quality art in and around this storm drain. I mean, nobody's ever done that before. So I think it not only is the excitement is so broad, we have artists coming out of the woodwork trying to advertise their art and want to be a part of this project. And live music and poetry and all of that kind of thing is going to be on top of stormwater infrastructure, giving people a place to live and recreate. And it's going to improve their quality of life. It's going to improve property values. I can guarantee you that the shop owners that have to suffer the brunt of the assessment to pay for all of this, they're not complaining to me. In fact, they're willingly stepping up to the table and say, let's do this. It's going to bring tens of thousands of people to their shops. It's a win-win all the way around. When we partner with nature And you can never win a battle if you declare war on water. You have to partner with it. So that's what we're doing. We're using nature and the physics of water to actually clean it and take care of the pollution that we create in urban areas.
Well, that's why we like to tell your story. You're very passionate and you're doing great things out there. So I've got a little gift for you. I'm going to make you king for a day. What would you want your subjects to do? What's the first thing?
I would like them to take 15 minutes of their day and think about how they live their lives and how they can improve that living of life by simply understanding how they pollute and then just stop doing it. And that would value everyone's life would be better, I think, if we could just become more aware and more passionate about trying to save Mother Earth or Father Earth, whichever your preference is, and using this beautiful space that we live in and not just make it a concrete jungle. And we can do that, I think, if everybody just took 15 minutes a day and just committed themselves to not to pollute that day.
Well, Patrick, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Keep up the fantastic work, and we'll keep shining a spotlight on that project so the rest of the world can help follow your lead.
Okay. I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
That's Renaissance man Patrick Lindemann, who serves as the Ingham County Drain Commissioner and is on a mission to replace pipes with plants, improving the quality of life in the community. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Support our Podbean patron drive when you visit the Green Sense Farm website. And it's your contribution that supports independent media like us. And it pays for quality programming so we can continue to bring you great guests. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And you could also check out the list of radio stations that air our show. Keep learning, stay fresh, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.